Hello and welcome back to another episode of Binge List and Box Office Hits, the podcast about all things film, TV and streaming, with your host, Shannon Holiday, and me, Letitia Thomas.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Binge List and Box Office Hits, the podcast about all things film, TV and streaming. I am your host, Shannon Holiday, and I'm joined at the decks once again with Letitia Thomas. How are you doing this afternoon, Letitia?
Yeah, good. It's become the afternoon, which is nuts. Time is just...
It's all relative. It's ticking. But depends on who, too. What have you been up to this morning? Because I know you came over a little bit later today on your own accord.
I had to duck over to a family friend's house and see them about... I met about a dog.
About a dog. A couple of puppies that your family's looking after.
Yes. So that's pretty much it.
That's exciting.
Yes.
Yeah. And I went out for coffee this morning. Because you're obviously getting your way here.
Yes.
A different way. So I was like, oh, I've got the morning. I'm going to get some breakfast and get a coffee and get outside today and... Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, wish I'd had a coffee, but, you know, yeah. I'll pep up.
We'll get you pepped with what we're talking about this week. A bit of Shakespeare.
Yeah, it's gonna be pepped.
Really pepped. when you turned up today, obviously myself and Ben were watching the last episode of The Grand Tour.
Yes, it's the only one I've seen.
I know it wasn't your wheelhouse when you turned up. I'm like, just watch along. We're watching the last one.
Oh, it's fine.
And no, it's good. It's good to see kind of... for anyone at home who does know that the guys are obviously retiring and they've gone from 22 years worth of being on air between Top Gear and then the Grand Tour. It's basically just a fun kind of entertaining show around the concept of cars, but it's definitely like it involves them just going on little adventures and just they're great presenters.
Honestly, I don't know who any of them are except for Jeremy Clarkson.
Richard Hammond and James May.
Recognize
the other two.
Them kind of. I didn't actually
They
know
do that. Other shows as well.
Yeah, look.
Obviously, Jeremy Clarkson's the big one, and he's got his little Clarkson's Farm show now on Amazon,
yes,
which is doing
very
well.
I've watched some at your house, actually. Yeah.
It's very endearing. It's a very endearing show because he follows, like, you know, a family of farmers and, like, the troubles that they have to go through on an English farm from day to day and growing livestock and trying to sell, you know, products out of there. It's actually pretty interesting show. But this one was, yeah, I love my Top Gear / Grand Tour because – I'm not a huge car head, but enough to be like, I like that car. I want to know more about it.
Yeah, you definitely have an interest.
But not like an obsession.
Yeah.
You know? So I did enjoy it, and we've got about half an hour left to watch the last part of that episode. Finalize that.
Pretty much.
I know. Exciting. What else have you been doing this week, Letitia?
What have I been doing? End of last week I went to the cinemas.
Yes, please tell me about that.
Yes, okay. So I took myself off to the cinemas to see his three daughters. I was the only one who had a ticket when I first got in there. And then this
I did see your story
It was. I was like, why is no one sitting here already? Come on now. Because you know how like the cinemas put in seats so it looks
like
it's
full? I think
it
looks like it's full, yeah.
Yeah, or like someone has purchased a ticket. Yeah. It had only been me and I was like, I need a seat. Anyway. There was no competition, so it would have been fine. But I'm there waiting, and then, you know, I hear someone come in, so I turn around to see who it might be. And this, like, older gentleman, he's probably, like, in his, maybe 60s or something, goes, oh, sorry, you've got company. And I was like, oh, no, it's fine. Like, I'm glad someone else is seeing this film because it looked really good. And we had a little bit of a chat, and then that was it. Holy crap. Like, this film is one of my top films of the year, maybe even will be my top film. I don't know yet just because.
There's a few things still coming.
Yeah, there's still time.
But so far it's the leader.
I think so, yeah. It's definitely stayed with me longer than any of the others that I've seen this year. For anyone that doesn't know, it's his three daughters. It's an Azazel Jacobs film. He writes, directs, produces, edits it, basically does all of it. He wrote it for Carrie Coon, Natasha Lyonne and Elizabeth Olsen. And it's the story of three sisters who are hanging out in their dad's New York apartment and he's on death's door. Like, he's going to go any time now. And it's just, it's almost like a play. It's almost entirely within the unit complex or the apartment complex, I guess, because it's American. And it is just stunning.
It's like one of, is like from my understanding of it, it's quite an emotionally impacting film.
Yeah, it the credits rolled. I won't get into too much of it, but the credits rolled and we sat there and watched them finish. And then I just hear this man blow his nose behind me and I just chuckled like one of those.
Yeah.
And I just went, yep, same. Cause I had been weeping for a lot of it. And then, yeah, me and this man just had this nice little chat and he sort of thanked me for watching it with him. And it was just a really human
experience.
Like, yeah. Just you and one stranger sort of having a little weep together. But it was like one of those films that although it sort of kills you emotionally, it's a cathartic release. It's not like, oh God, now I feel horrible. And
no, it's the opposite effect.
Yeah. I still felt the effects of having wept for ages after, but it's out on the 20th of September. Yeah. So if you please watch it, cause we'll be talking about it in probably depth.
I will watch it as soon as it drops on Netflix on the 20th.
And I'll get into it, probably spoil it a bit.
We'll do a spoiler cast. But
I've heard sort of, obviously, I found it fantastic, but like other people have gone Academy Awards for some people.
That's what I've heard. Natasha Lyonne supporting that kind of thing.
Yeah,
I've heard, there's noms possibly going to happen from this one.
Definitely just, oh my God, just so stunning. I can't wait to rewatch it because I just keep thinking about it.
You're
going to
watch it again when it comes on Netflix?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I found it on a dodgy website the other night and I thought,
I saw it, I think, pop up online.
Yeah, I think it was one you sent to me.
I think it's Cam, though. Like, it says they're on HD Cam. And I'm not going to watch it in a poor quality.
I'm kind of sad in the sense that it didn't get a better release. Because, in some places in America, they obviously did, Q&As and stuff in New York, whatever. But they did, a 35 mil print. Oh. Like, Netflix actually, let them have that to put it on in some cinemas because it was really shot on 35 mil
to see,
and I just think
the grain to it, like film feel. Yeah.
Like although it's a Netflix stuff, and I've been like, oh, it's a shame, it's a shame, it's a shame. I've been like watching a bunch of interviews because I'm in deep rabbit holes, and what a shocker! And you know, they were sort of saying how nice it is that because it was filmed completely independent. Like Aza just got the money he had, got them together, made the film. No one, he wasn't trying to sell it to people to get funding. And then Netflix paid them like $7 million or something. I feel like I heard that somewhere. But then also awarded them the opportunity to put it in cinemas and have a proper.
That's the difference between like release. A Netflix film and a film that's bought by Netflix. So Netflix films are generally the ones that you hear like, oh, it's another Netflix film where it's like, it's a little bit, you know, the screenplay is a bit dodgy. It's not it's kind of poorly acted. Whereas this one's, it's made. And it just happened to go to Netflix.
Yeah, Netflix acquired it and then gave them the respect, I guess, to put it in
limited theaters. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a masterpiece. It's definitely going to be one of those ones, I think, that people will keep referring to almost to the point, like, I'm like, I want to rewatch it before I think about it. But I'm like, I got to update my Letterboxd, which I've been thinking about anyway before this.
Have you put it in?
It is, but it's not like a top films. I'm thinking
top four.
Yeah.
Oh, you think top four?
Was
interesting.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I feel that's like one of those now, but I need to give it time because
settle with it.
I'm very close to it at the moment.
Yeah. That's the issue is sometimes you get so involved and wrapped up in a film you've just seen. You're like, no, it's the
best thing. I mean, that being
phenomenal thing I've ever seen. And then you sit with it like 3 weeks later, you're like, oh, look, don't get me wrong. It's amazing. But does it sit where I thought it did?
Yeah.
Maybe not. It's a bit more realistic.
Literally thinking about it like every day since.
Speaking of which,
very good.
I've got a film for you that's been happening to me this week as well.
It's been happening to you. I love that. Yeah,
where it's like it's kind of sat with me and I think it's probably one of the best films of the year that I've seen.
Yeah.
I got the opportunity to go see The Substance on Friday.
Right, yeah. What is this film? I've never heard.
So it's it's not out yet in Australia. Oh. I got the chance to see it early because they were doing a Fright Night special and it was like a one-off one session over an event. So I went and saw it. Like it was only advertised like that day as well. So I went and saw it. It's out on the 23rd or something. I think it's like next week, Thursday.
Okay.
It's a Demi Moore, Margaret Qualley, Dennis Quaid film.
Okay.
And it's about like an aging kind of star, Demi Moore. And she's getting to that period of time where like Hollywood like forgets about her and that.
Because she's...
Yeah, it's like, a, you know, the newer look... beauty standards. We're trying to look for someone younger, yeah, kind of situation. And she gets the opportunity to, like, through this, like, substance, essentially have a new form of herself in her 20s, like a newer, younger look. And that's what Margaret Qualley plays, yeah, the younger version. It's hectic. It is insane. The body horror that happens, it's a horror film.
Yeah.
The body horror is probably some of the most gruesome, gory body horror I've ever seen in a film.
Oh, body horror is the one that gets me, yeah, out of all horrors.
It sits with you. It's such a unique film. It's an original idea.
Mm-hmm.
It's shot phenomenally well. Like, just some of the angles that they kind of put you through. The soundtrack and, like, the score is, it's infectious in a way that just gets under your skin.
Yeah.
But it's also, like, electro-techno-y at the same time. It's just, it's so unique as well at the same time. The acting is also just phenomenal, both from Demi Moore and Margaret Qualley.
Yeah.
They're also saying Demi Moore might be up for
an Oscar. Oh, okay.
Yeah, 100%. It's got I think it's like an average of 4.1 to 4.5 on Letterboxd already from the few, because it's been to a few awards.
Yeah.
Kind of
festivals
and stuff, yeah, before it goes wide the end of this month.
Yeah.
And they're just like, yeah, it's balls to the wall, insane film.
Oh, I have to try and catch it.
Yeah. Anyone that's, because you probably haven't seen, anyone that's listening probably hasn't seen the trailer. Go out of your way to Google on YouTube, watch the Substance trailer. You'll get a feel of the vibe, and just trust me when I say go and see it. It'll be a unique experience.
Yeah.
I will say that you're probably not ready for how it turns out, but it is such a good film. It's gone into my third spot for the year.
Ooh.
So obviously my top three are Dune Part 2, yeah, still.
I still haven't seen that.
Challenges. Yeah, second, because I just love that
You
film.
Love that film.
I love
it. I mean, I appreciate it, but you love it. Yeah.
Substance is 3.
Interesting.
Yeah. Really good.
That's cool.
Really awesome. So that was exciting.
I watched a TV series this week.
Tell me.
I got through Fantasmas, which is an original idea by Julio Torres, and like literally everyone is in the show. Like any like comedian New York type person is in it. And I'd been told to watch this. I think I'd seen it advertised, was like, this is interesting. And then Natasha Lyonne's in 2 episodes. So I was like, well, one day I'll get there. But then Tammy had told me to watch it and I'd finished stuff. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go watch it. This is the most original, bizarre show I've seen maybe ever. It's gorgeous. The production is there. And it's all about this character. I can't think what his name is anyway, that Julio Torres plays, who I don't even know. He's got this mole that he thinks is cancerous, but he needs to go, and it's got something to do with an opal somehow. I don't know, it looked like the opal. He's got to go on an adventure, whatever. But he wants to go get it biopsied. But to do that, he needs a proof of life card.
Okay.
And he doesn't have a proof of life card, and he doesn't know why he should need a proof of life card. And it's just him going through all these like scenarios to like figure this whole thing out. But he's also like this gifted dude, because when he was a kid, he got struck by lightning. So now he can like sense things. So the show's called Fantasmas because it opens on him at Crayola going, we need a new color. And it's the color clear. He's like, we need a clear crayon because it is a thing and it happens. So therefore we must have a color for this. What do we call it? He goes, Fantasmas. And they go, what about it? Fantasma. He goes, no, Fantasmas. So like the whole thing is just that kind of
humor.
Everything is just like a skit or a sketch, but pulled together. Like
that sounds like my type of humor
there
as well.
Is the funniest.
I love skits.
It's the funniest scene. Should I spoil it?
I mean, it's fine. It's not one of those shows. You're like, oh my god, tell me.
Where someone is getting on Grindr.
Yep.
And it shows you sort of the other side of like the other person, and it's a sort of like fat middle-aged white man. But behind him is a painting.
All social media dating apps.
Yeah, look, listen. behind him, there's a painting of a chihuahua. But it talks. Oh. Like, it's the one controlling him. But
like Ratatouille?
No, like, it's just like talking, like some demonic painting that's like getting him to do it. It's like, get him, tell him you're going to like, and it's going to get a bit dirty. So if your children just skip ahead, like suck him. I'm going to suck the life out of him. And it's just like,
oh my God.
So weird. But I was like, crying with laughter.
It's just done very well.
It's done so well. And you're just like, what the actual F am I watching?
Yeah.
And it's just bits like that. But then it comes together at the end somehow. Mm. All of the insanity that is this show.
It wraps
show.
Up into like a really heartfelt storyline. Maybe not heartfelt,
not quite, but like it wraps itself up in a very real, emotional, proper way. And you're like,
how did we get here?
It's a fever dream. It is truly a fever dream. That's like great. 20 minute episodes. I think there's six eps.
Yeah,
it's
pretty snappy.
Binge? It's a Max show, so it must be on Binge for us.
Yeah.
It's not up for an Emmy, but watch it anyway.
Check it out.
It is nuts.
I will have to have a look. Yeah. That sounds like right up my alley.
It's hard to explain because it's just...
Yeah, it's a fever dream.
Yeah.
Something else we both watched this week.
Yes.
Dee Dee.
Tell
me about that.
Yeah. They put a dead squirrel in a Riot t-shirt. I am here for it. That is
that
cinema.
That sequence.
Oh, my God.
When they find it and they're swinging it around.
Tell the squirrel story.
I'd stop there.
How
good was it?
This film was... I think amazing in the sense of like, it's telling the story about a Taiwanese American kid in 2008 America. Yeah. And I think, he must have been, his character is 2 years older than I would have been at the time. Yeah. But I've kind of got to an age now, which is bizarre. I didn't even think of it, that my childhood is a version of nostalgia and it is in a time and it's now being shown on film.
That terrified me a little bit.
Yeah.
Because that was me.
Yeah.
Yeah. When it was like on AOL Messenger. Yes. Well, mine's MSN, but like
exactly.
It's the same thing.
I was like a little bit behind the eight ball in that sense, but it was exactly the same. The chats were the same.
Yeah.
The sort of YouTube was the same.
Having an iPod, you know, like as your central
thing. The
little
thing
you're
nanos.
Holding.
Yeah, baby. I still got mine. It works.
I've still got my iPods.
The
but
purple
like
one.
The vibe of that era. That was my teenage years. I really resonated with me, this film.
I'd heard about this online because of the amount of Paramore references they'd included to give it that sort of time period.
Yeah. Soundtrack was banging.
So I was like, oh, I'll probably check it out just because I'm curious. And then I'd heard it was good in the same sort of vein.
Yeah.
But then you'd seen it and I was like, well.
We have to now.
I must watch it so we can talk about it.
Yeah. It's basically like. It's the director's like self-autobiographical kind of take on his childhood living in America with, you know, Taiwanese parents. His dad's living overseas making the money for the family. So it's an absent dad situation where he's still connected to the family, but you don't see it.
No.
It's about like a coming age film about him and his relationship with his mother. Mm-hmm. How was the relationship between him and the grandma?
Oh my God.
The grandma was fantastic.
I love
she
her.
She was lovely.
Nai-Nai.
Yeah, Nai-Nai. Relationships with his friends, his crush, you know, his older sister as well, who's about to leave and go to college.
So 2008.
Yeah.
Just the language they use, the way they're like calling each other gay and stuff. It's like, you can be gay and have cancer. It's like,
I don't think you can have two things.
God, it like, yeah, look, we've changed our language now, but holy crap.
It was very 2008,
was it a throwback?
But it was very, like, I know we're a little bit like more PC now, but like even teenagers are teenagers. Mm-hmm. They don't care. They're crass. And that was like a perfect encapsulation of how they talk to each other.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That scene when it was like an action sequence, or like an action sequence when his friend gets his phone and is texting his crush.
Oh, that has
like
happened to me countless times at high school as well. So I was like, I know exactly how that feels.
I feel like so much of this was like, oh, like this is it happened to us. Even if we weren't doing the things that they were doing. People around us were doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was very an odd feeling to have because, you know, everything we've watched, like I was a baby in the 90s. So, I can relate to it in that, like, it still felt close to what I had, but this was like.
This is what I lived through. Yeah. Like, this is my experiences as a teenager. This was it. So, it's weird to see on film and have that nostalgia kick, like you said. It's worth checking out. It's everyone's saying it's really good. I don't think it's going to be like Oscar nod worthy, but it's still a really heartfelt, great film to see.
Yeah, it's very.
Considering it's his debut film.
Yeah, it
like,
is definitely
really well done.
Very, very good, and it probably deserved what it got in festivals.
Yeah.
It's not quite like you said an Oscar film, but like it's pretty close.
Mm.
In feeling like of like that indie but quality indie vibe. Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely got that as well. Something I didn't mention about The Substance, I'll just
go back,
then go forward. You're talking about screenplays. It won Cannes 2024 for best screenplay.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so just thought I'd mention that to you.
Yeah.
Given writing is important.
Yeah, I'm trying to I want the screenplay for his three daughters. Yeah. So I want it to like get.
Have you been awarded. Looking for it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not going to be out yet. No. I want it to get some like.
Just how noms. How certain so then I can, situations are written. Like
yeah, well, I've heard them talk about it and. Yeah, it's stunning. I don't want to get into it too much this week because
we'll get to it once I watch it.
You've not seen it. And the people at home most definitely them a probably chance. Haven't seen it.
Well, no.
It was very, very, very limited. Yeah.
Something else I'll speak about.
Go on.
New films.
Mm-hmm.
I watched the new version of The Crow this week.
How'd that go?
Well, here's the thing. I only recently watched the original Crow this year and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I really liked it. I love the gothic vibes, the dark kind of take on this gritty world and the protagonist. Brandon Lee, I thought, did a wonderful job. And obviously what happened around him was, you know, pretty heartbreaking to hear what happened on set. And I think they did a really justifiable job of creating a film out of what happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
I loved it. I really liked it. And what worked for that film is that gothic vibe, that campiness to it. What is in this film is none of that. They've taken out the gothic vibe. It's very modernized.
Oh.
There's no camp. It's very serious. Like, it's very straight down the line about what's happening, who's betrayed who, and all that jazz. Now, we know in the original film that the couple die in the first scene, right? Like, that's the whole point of what's happening is they die. Yeah, he comes back and it's like an revenge kind of tour film. The first 50 minutes of this film is establishing their relationship. Boy, oh boy, does that not work in a film like this.
That's what I'll say about this film that I, the History of Daughters that I just watched. Yeah. It's very much one that doesn't treat the audience as silly. And a lot of films treat the audience like they're silly now. Like in that film, I have no idea what these people's lives are like outside of what is happening to them.
Mm.
And you can follow it. It's fine. Too many films now treat the audience like they're spoon-fed. Absolutely idiots. Spoon-fed. Yeah, and it's like you don't need that much.
But at the start of this film, these characters don't know each other even.
No.
No. Okay. Do I need to know their entire romantic story to get the point of
because
he's going to revenge what happens to them?
All you need to know is
we know the Crow story by now.
How much? Exactly.
The comic's been out and the original movie has been out for like 25 years or something, like at least. It's audiences are aware of what they're seeing in terms of what his purpose is on film.
And even if they're not,
you can establish it pretty early, like they did in the first film.
You want to get in and you want to get out of a film as quick as possible.
Especially one around like this. Like, it's around the action pieces. It's around, you know, his grief and his story arc. The character of, you know, the young character in the first film, the young girl?
Yeah.
Where it's kind of like
Sarah, I think. Isn't it
Sarah? Yeah, I think it's Sarah. Anyway, they use her character to kind of like humanize him across the story.
Yeah.
There's no character like that in this one.
Oh.
There's no character at all.
She was the best part of that film.
I agree.
Because she was the one that connected all of the other characters. She was the central through line for None him and, you know, his girlfriend, for her mum.
The cop.
For the cop.
Everyone.
Everyone. She humanized that story because essentially it was a little girl grieving.
Yeah. Everything was through her lens, right? Yeah. Essentially. Like.
Yeah.
None of that.
Yeah, well, that's a shame.
None of that. It's not great. I don't think Bill Skarsgård is a bad actor, but I don't think this was his best work.
Yeah.
On screen, I think.
Maybe he could feel it. You can feel when you're there.
He definitely distanced himself from the film after it kind of came out and there was a few responses about it. Mm. He was like, kind of just didn't really
that was
comment.
A paycheck.
Didn't really. He hasn't commented on it too much since. I think he knew it was kind of a stinker. It's really unfortunate because I really like the first one and I think you can do a modern version of this and do it well.
Yeah.
This just wasn't the angle. I don't think take it so seriously. Like the way they created this character just was, it was so different from the take that Brandon Lee did. It just wasn't for me.
That's a shame.
It wasn't for me. So unfortunately, probably not worth seeing if I would tell the audience to see the new Crow. Just watch the original.
You'll
have a much better time.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
It is. Anything else you watched?
I did, but it's not worth mentioning.
Yeah, we'll get to it another week, I guess.
We can just move on.
Move on. Now, you've got some news here written down.
Yes, I do. There's a bloody Goonies sequel with the original cast. It's 40 years later.
I read some type of, not so much synopsis. I think there was like a general story idea. I think they, it's them all coming back to the same town and they're looking for the buried treasure that one of them buried in the town.
Yeah.
Like some part of it that they took from the cave with the boat. I don't know how it's going to work, but.
Here's the thing. When I was a young kid, I buried some crap on the beach where my dad lived. Mm-hmm. I tried to come back for it that day even.
Oh, you're not going to wait 40 years?
We dug forever. We never found it.
No. But it's our turn. Down here, right now.
We're going to find it. I don't know. I
like the Goonies.
Oh, no.
I really like the Goonies. Same. I think it's a really great take on childhood wonder and camaraderie between friends. But does it require a sequel? Do you really need to see what happened to these kids?
No, no,
40 years later when they're close to their 60s now?
Not even a little bit. And like we're talking about, like, obviously we're in the era of not even franchise. Well, it is franchise, but, you know, like,
even standalone films are getting a legacy sequel now.
We're legacy sequeling
everything.
Everything. And like having just come off the back of Beetlejuice out last week.
Yeah.
Or Beetlejuice. That one didn't need it, but there was an opportunity to continue that story logically, right? Whether they executed it is a different thing. But, like, I don't know if the Goonies is one that required that.
No, when you see the Goonies, you don't think, oh, I'd love to see some more world building out of this.
I don't want
to
see them.
I don't want to see. Well, that's the thing.
It was cute. They were children.
That's the point. Is it's whimsical. They're children. Everything's seen through the lens of a child. So it's like so simplistic. Whereas like now they're adults. You have to put a
adult lens on it.
And it's like, I don't want to see them doing mundane things like work in an office and then realize they're depressed and they want to go back to their lives that they had when they were
60-year-old men digging up treasure for an hour.
Exactly.
Tired because it's hot.
Yeah.
Or it's night and it's dark and they can't see because they. Old and their eyes don't work.
Yeah, I don't want to see that where it's like essentially the heroes have fallen and to get back to that like established hero title, they have to go through something to get there again. I don't want that.
It's just, it's not a good story because if it was a good story, that would have been the story.
Exactly.
40 years ago. It is possible to make, you know, new ideas or even rehash old ideas, which we'll get into when we talk about these Shakespearean
adaptations. When we get to them, obviously what you can do with, like, you know, tropes and stories is how you can reimagine
Hollywood
it.
But itself, in many a sense, at the moment is like this nightmare confusion thing. Actually, I didn't want to bring this up. Hmm. Do you remember how Paramount, for one, was deleting a bunch of their IP off Paramount Plus, including the Rise of the Pink Ladies that I think got like 3 weeks or
and then
3 months
or
something?
Yeah.
We're in Australia getting it released on DVD.
Oh, they must have sold it off to distribution.
Yeah.
That's a strange one.
Yeah.
But there's a bunch of them doing that.
I saw it the other day and I went, what?
Same with Crater off Disney. I'm pretty sure you can watch it on Amazon Prime now. Like, you can rent it. Weird. So they've just sold anything they had on there, they sold. It must have been something to do with money making.
Yeah.
So very strange. It's a very strange world,
so
Hollywood,
confusing.
At the moment.
No one knows what they're doing with it.
No, they don't. And it's very evident.
TV is getting absolutely wrecked in the sense that, like, yeah, we're making some stunning TV. Don't get me wrong. I think some of the stuff we've made in the last 10 to 15 years is like just an outstanding feat. But the problem with that is other shows are just getting axed. Nothing's getting the runtime it had. There's no work in the same way that they used to be. There's a new show on Channel 9 or something like that. I don't know. My mum watched the first episode. Yeah. And it's some crime show that they're doing. And it's got like a bunch of like old Australian actors now. Like they're now considered older. But I was like, oh yeah, what's the runtime? It's like some crime show, some new city homicide type thing. It's like 6 episodes. I'm like,
oh,
mum, that would have had 26.
At least.
At least.
Australian.
A season.
Yeah.
And now they can afford 6 apps. And they'll be like, I didn't work.
Oh, they'll cancel it. You watch. It'll be cancelled.
Oh, absolutely.
100% cancelled. It's like NCIS Sydney. It was only like 6 apps.
Yeah.
It's like NCIS shows.
Yeah, you can't do a show and expect it to do well when the format for that is 23 episodes a season.
Any other NCIS show that was in America, like the three main ones that were out for a while.
Hawaii.
New Orleans, LA, and the original one.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Because Hawaii got cancelled this year, which I'm very mad about. I know it got cancelled,
but
I'm so mad.
It still had a bit.
They were 226 seasons for the first two, and then season three was 13 before it got picked off for part B of the season. It got cancelled. So
right,
it's a bitter point for me moving forward. But yeah, like the other NCIS ones were like, 23 to 26 abs, and this got six. They're getting a second season, remarkably.
I am glad, but I worked with one of the lead actresses in her first screen thing. So I'm like, good for you. Yeah.
She's the quirky one that works in the tech
area. Nah.
The blonde girl with the short hair?
No, the other detective.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I know who which one you mean.
Yeah, Tully Knuckle.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, sorry. It was the other one. Yeah, she's like the – because there's like obviously –
she's the Australian cop.
Yeah. I know the one.
Yeah.
Because there's always like two teams of like cops. There's always the main A team and there's always a B team. She's in the B team with the other guy. Yeah.
Yeah, we worked on a thing for a whole day and she just spat salty plums into my hand.
Is that the one?
Yeah.
That's the one. I remember you talking about that.
Yeah, now she's doing well. I'm like, good for you.
Good for you. Look, I've seen it.
Yeah.
It's got some teething work to work out. But, I mean, it was first season. If we wrote off Parks and Rec after the first season, we wouldn't have got that gem of a show.
That's the thing. I was listening to the creators of Hacks not that long back, and I can't remember if it was Lucia who was saying it, but one of the creators was saying that, like, was it her or Jen? Anyway, I think it was Jen because she'd worked on Parks and Rec at, like, season four or something like that. And she was saying the problem with the way TV, the machine, works now is, like, nothing's got time. Like, Parks and Rec did not succeed in its first season, and often comedy, it takes longer to build because you need to, like – you need people to care about the characters, but also you don't have enough time because you've got to infuse it with so many jokes and stuff. So it takes a bit to get it going, to get it to that beloved status. But now things are getting cancelled immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost impossible to have these long-standing shows now.
They're very rare these days for them to take off. It's like a needle in a haystack, one will.
Yeah.
You know, it'll just be, you know, taken from the get-go with a massive audience, but it's very rare.
Well, even stuff like Schitt's Creek, right, that went gangbusters. That took to its last season.
Yeah, it took a very long time before it got that mass audience. I only heard about it from about season three.
Yes.
And that's when I kind of attached myself to Australia. It. But it was out like three seasons before. I even heard about it.
Once it got to Netflix in Australia, I was on board, but no one had heard about it at the time.
No, it was one of those sleeper hits.
And I was just walking around doing my little Alexis impressions and I was like, what are you talking about?
It's like Suits. I don't know if you remember Suits, but it had a run on, I think it was Sci-Fi or something like that. It was on a separate channel in America and it had like okay numbers. It was doing along to get its next season, enough to get its next season, but then it got attached to Netflix, like it got ported over and it went gangbusters. Like it blew up again.
Right.
It had a huge resurgence when it hit that audience because it hit a mass appeal audience.
Well, that's what I remember, the resurgence, but I don't remember where it started.
Yeah. It was on a completely different channel. Then I think obviously syndication, they sold it off to Netflix and it had a massive audience after that. So it can happen. It just depends, I guess, where and when you can see it. I think we've got an email to talk about.
We do have an email to talk about.
Do you want to start it off?
I can. Yeah. Give me a good second. Yeah, we got an email from Wayne. Thank you, Wayne.
Thank you so much, Wayne, for sending an email.
I actually love this, and I was going
to
email you back, and then I thought, I'll just wait till we're doing the podcast.
We'll talk about it.
Thank you for your happy birthday message. I am old.
Not as old as this one, but
he sort of just mentioned a lot of the episodes that he's enjoyed.
Yes.
God, he loves the Muppets, and you know what, Wayne, so do we.
Yeah. We're glad that someone else does as well. They can actually understand what we love about them.
And then he also told us that we definitely, definitely need to have watched LA Confidential.
Yeah.
He said it's a gem and it's sort of as close to Chinatown as any other film. And Shannon and I are big fans of Chinatown.
Yeah, we are. So if it's like that, I'll definitely appreciate
it. Yeah, thanks so much for getting in touch. It actually like is nice to hear that people enjoy our company each week. It makes it feel like it's worth doing.
I read that and I was like, oh, that's really nice.
Because sometimes I feel like we're just, you know,
talking into a void.
Yeah, who cares? Yeah. You know,
it's like we see the numbers and it's like, yeah, it's trickling along, but you just don't know someone actually
lets you know. People want us to continue and it's like, oh, you kept me company. It's like, that's nice. It makes it feel like I'll put in the extra effort and go the extra mile, keep it going kind of thing.
Yeah. We very much appreciate it. And we are obviously coming into our, the end of our second season of the show. If anyone does have any ideas of where you might want to see our third season go, any track ideas, we're always open to it. You know, we love doing this, but if you're the ones listening, you're the ones that are consuming the content.
Yeah.
So if you have any ideas on what you'd want to see from us coming into our third year, please let us know.
Yeah, definitely. And then we can get on it early in the break.
Yeah.
And
when we do our planning sessions and
Really start watching some stuff that you want us to talk about.
If there's any particular episode you'd want us to kind of run. The only thing we've kind of locked in, and I've kind of let Tish know well in advance, we're doing a Lord of the Rings episode.
Apparently.
In season 3, we're going to sit down and watch the extended editions.
I don't
together.
Know if we're going to do the extended.
We will. We've got quite a while before season 3 rolls around.
I don't
around.
Think I can sit my brain down to that much action.
I'm going
to
give you a fidget spinner that day.
That won't help.
It'll make it worse.
I daydream in cinemas. It's the worst.
It's the worst. But yeah, let us know if there's anything at all that you'd kind of want us to cover as a topic.
Especially if it's TV, because TV is hard to do throughout the year.
Gives us time to watch it. So if you ask us now, we get time to watch some more TV. Movie's easy, 2 hours, 3 hours. You can sit down, right?
Can make it happen.
Like, a TV show that might have gone for 3 seasons. It's a bit of work there.
Yeah.
It's a bit of work. We appreciate the email, Wayne. Thank you for getting back to us. And anyone else wants to, please do it as well. We love
it. Yeah, it makes it,
makes it real.
Makes it real.
Yeah. Thank you for that. And that's about it so far, guys. We are going to get into the topic of today, Tish.
Yeah, we're going to talk about some films that are, incidentally, just Shakespearean stories that have been adapted. Same yentl, different geschleia, which is a saying in the industry, I believe. I got told it was. I've heard no one else but my lecturer say it. It's basically
do you want to say it again?
No. basically means same woman, different dress.
Yes.
Same story, different, dressed up differently.
Say yes to the dress.
Yeah, because it's pretty much like it's known that there's about seven stories that you can tell, sort of man versus world, man versus machine, man versus self, man versus nature, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's been a while since
there's always a different myriad of takes.
But basically, you can boil them down to seven basic stories.
And we're looking at the ones that have taken the concepts of Shakespeare and adapted it into its own modern version.
And I think talking about this now is cool in the sense of just like Hollywood's eating its self and it just keeps doing these like legacy sequels instead of just taking a film, dressing it up differently and giving it to you, kind of like they did with like bloody like Bug's Life and Seven Samurai and the Magnificent Seven. It's all Seven Samurai. They just dressed it up and sold it to kids and we love it.
That's what they need to be doing a lot more, I think, because one, Shakespeare is like, it's a tried and tested formula that works, right? It's a great, he's got a great myriad of plays and stuff that you can use.
I've got a book, it's like a bookstop, like a doorstop, it's insane.
And when it's done right, it's done really well.
Yeah.
Do you want to probably start from one of the biggest ones that we know about?
You want to tell me which one that is?
I reckon the biggest one that everyone's probably seen and doesn't probably even realize that it's probably based on Shakespeare is The Lion King.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I was hoping that that's what you were talking about.
It's Lion King from 1994.
Yeah, the original animated one.
Yeah, I mean, also obviously the one from like 2 or 3 years ago, but it's just a remake. So,
it's based on Hamlet.
It is.
Which I'm not even sure if I've read. I think I've probably attempted Hamlet.
You've got the book. You've got Shakespeare's
works. I
bought
his collected works when I was in uni because I was very into,
knowing everything. Just being involved.
I took everything very seriously and it was aspirational. Like, I will get to reading these. And I did read a few for a while there, but, anything, it takes
a
bit to get back.
I've read Macbeth. Oh, it's my favorite Romeo one. And Juliet. I love Macbeth.
Yeah, I've read a couple. But, Hamlet, I'm not sure if I've completely read, but it takes the story of Simba, like Hamlet, who is a young prince, whose father, the king, is murdered, Mufasa. By his uncle Scar, little bastard. And then, like Simba's father appears to him as a ghost, which you see with Hamlet Rafiki and stuff, and that's obviously in Hamlet.
Yep.
Simba's like not sure what to do. He's sent away by his uncle.
Yeah, he's outcast.
And then, he returns to the kingdom.
Finds his uncle, kills him,
and avenges the death
and becomes
king, which is not what happened in Hamlet, but it's a kid's story.
Yeah, you've got to make it still Disney-fied as well.
We have to make it,
but it takes a lot of the elements of Hamlet and puts it into a story.
And like, you know, Shakespeare did that before. Like a lot of his stuff are based on, you know, Greek tragedies and are almost 100%. Stolen from. And that's kind of
just he did what we the do. Same thing. He's reestablished the story and turned it into
and
his own.
I think we need to do more of that because so many of these, which we'll get into, are like some of, you know, the most beloved films of, you know, over time.
Yeah.
Because they know that the general story beats that they're trying to do, it works. And why not adapt something from something else? It's just, that's how the world works, how we tell stories. And like, who hasn't, apart from your housemate Ben, we found out last night, seen The Lion King?
I know, that's wild. I was like talking to him about doing this episode and I was like, yeah, we're looking at the concept of Shakespeare and how movies have done it in a more modern take. And I was like, you know, everyone's seen like The Lion King and I listed off it a couple of others. He's like, yeah, he did it in a jokingly way. He was like, yeah, everyone's seen The Lion King. And I looked at him and like, hang on, let's just back up a bit. Have you seen the 1994 cartoon special, The Lion King? And he just shook his head. I'm like, how does one get away with that? Like, how do you have that
I was quite
gap in your knowledge?
Quite old before I watched it.
I was like, have you seen the unfortunate CGI Fest revival version? And he was like, no, I haven't seen that either. I was like, okay, well,
have you read Hamlet?
If you said yes to that.
I would have been like, whoa. No, impressive. But like, yeah, I was quite old once I like watched it enough to remember it. I think I was about 14 in school, but I definitely had seen it before that because I'd seen the sequel, which is...
Yeah, you talking about the sequel. I have not seen it, but apparently that's also based on...
Yeah, it's Romeo and Juliet, which I'd forgotten until I was sort of doing some research for this episode.
Yeah.
And then it was like, oh, it's Romeo and Juliet. I'm like, oh, I do have a vague
Does
memory.
It feel like that?
Yeah, it's I think it's Simba's daughter.
Yeah, because it's about the kids then, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's their kids and they must it must be like, I think it's Scar's, one of Scar's kids.
Yeah.
Because I don't think, is Scar like biological? Anyway, I don't know.
No, because if you see Mufasa.
That's right.
The prequel movie that's about to come
which
out.
Which is why
one of them's adopted.
They're able to, yeah. I don't know, who cares? It's Shakespearean and whatever anyway. Yeah. But yeah, they have the kids fall in love and it's that story, which I don't remember a lot.
I think it was a straight to DVD movie,
yeah,
Simba's Pride.
I think so.
Didn't check that out.
I don't know why I had it. It's like anything you just sort of acquired in those days.
One of those ones you're like, how did I get this VHS?
Yeah.
You know? Where did this
come from? Someone probably gave it to me or something.
Funny that you mentioned that. This is completely off topic, but I was going to mention it anyway. I ended up with the VHS copy of Aladdin 3.
They did a third one?
Yeah, Aladdin King of Thieves.
Oh.
It's the third one.
I think I've only seen the first one.
Well, there's the first one. There's the second one where Jafar returns.
Mm-hmm.
And the third one's King of Thieves, where he takes on the story of the 40 thieves.
Right.
And I think I saw that one more than the first one, just because I had it. I don't know how I got it.
Me with The Little Mermaid. I think I'd seen the first one once, maybe. Probably rented it from the video store or something. But my idiot dad bought us the second one on VHS.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I watched that like
countless times. Yeah.
Yeah, it was probably the only true like Disney animated film I had in my house. Like I don't think I owned any others.
Wild. Wild, right? You just end up with these movies and you're like, oh, they're in my catalogue now. But I guess that's with some people that was Simba's Pride, but I wasn't one of them.
But getting sort of back to Shakespeare as well, like it also, the original Lion King takes bits from Henry the Fourth, parts 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Because it's sort of like Simba resembles Prince Hal more than Hamlet, who's like this headstrong prince who disobeys his father and then like learns to accept responsibility, which is kind of, you know, the Lion King, like Simba's like,
very much so.
Whatever, I'm this little,
remember
can't
he goes
wait to
off
be king.
To the Shadowlands at one point and he sees the hyenas.
Yes.
Because he's disrespected his father's wishes of not going there.
Yeah, you know.
But so he doesn't listen to his dad. And then there's a whole thing with the buffaloes. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, when he comes back, he understands the responsibility of what it means to be king.
Yeah, so, and he sort of takes that bit because he runs away with Timon and Pumbaa and, you know, Hakuna Matata.
Means no worries.
And just, you know,
great little
hangs out in the
session.
Jungle until till Nala comes back and our trio's down to two. Can you feel the love tonight?
Oh,
and,
that's right.
It's
a
beautiful scene.
It is a beautiful scene.
Beautiful scene.
Great movie.
Poor little Zazu's having, you know, nightmare times.
Not doing very well of looking after this young lion.
He's not doing well.
No. So that is The Lion King. Another one based on Hamlet is The Northman, which I didn't realize, but now I kind of look into it and I go, yeah, I can see the parallels of
avenging
the
father. I do want to watch this film, the Robert Eggers one, but didn't quite get to it this
All
week.
I'll say is about Eggers is if you've seen any of the other ones, like The Lighthouse or The Witch, is how real and how lived in this world feels that he creates. And that's the same with The Northman. It's very like Norse mythology, but it is definitely like an avenging a father's murder kind of situation that takes place at the end on top of a volcanic kind of hill thing. Really great visual style. It's worth checking out. It's a good film. I can see elements of it in there. It's probably more loosely adapted than probably The Lion King kind of follows it pretty strictly. But yeah, it does have elements of Shakespeare in it as well. So it is happening in even the most modern of films, because that's only from 2022.
Yeah.
So it's just crazy. This,
you know, and that is why I had endeavored to read a lot of Shakespeare, was because he's told stories so well.
Yeah.
They've stood the test of time.
Mm-hmm.
Why not borrow from one of the greats, you know? Yep.
Now, I know that a lot of people think when they like pick up a, you know, a playwright from Shakespeare and go, oh, I don't understand the language. Please try and get an understanding of it. Like if there's an interpretation YouTube video, you can kind of like read along with it.
They have these things.
Because they're like, great stories, but it's just that if the language barrier is there, like try and push past it.
Definitely used like the good old like No Fear Shakespeare books.
Yeah.
Where one side will have simplistic English Shakespearean and then the other will have, you know, modern English. And once you get into it, it does take a bit. Like, I'm not going to lie.
But you can see
there's a reason it takes me a while to get back into reading them, is because you've got to get the rhythm, which I never got taught in school and I'm kind of mad about it.
Mm.
The iambic pentameter, which is the rhythm in which you're supposed to say it, which then actually makes it make sense. I don't know why they didn't teach me that in public school, but anyway.
You just answered your own question. Public school.
Yeah, well.
Say no more.
But yeah, like it's the stories are very, very good.
Yeah, they are.
And so funny and dirty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because Shakespeare wrote for everyone. Yeah. He wasn't just writing for like, you know, the wealthy or whatever.
Another kind of aside, but it related, is I absolutely thoroughly love Baz Luhrmann's Romeo plus Juliet.
Oh, I haven't seen it since school.
Oh my God.
And I loved it then. It is
so good. Like that just modern version, but using the actual
old
vernacular
English.
Of Shakespeare. Perfect. I love it. I could watch it again and again.
Yeah, I need to rewatch. I've been meaning to probably since I was about
Claire Danes and Leonardo DiCaprio.
A baby in school and didn't really appreciate it because I was like, ugh.
Yeah, you're like, oh, it's just Romeo and Juliet.
I didn't like Romeo and Juliet because I was a teenager that was, you know, like
teen angst, strong with this one.
That's not real.
It's not a real thing.
And it's 3 days. Yeah, that's the whole point, you idiot. It's looking at teen love from the lens of someone who's older. Oh, now I get it.
Tick.
I went to when I was in Europe, we stopped in Verona because they have
Verona.
They have Juliet's house but like they're just buildings that they've called that. Yeah, there's a statue of Juliet, and you touch her boob, and it's good luck or something.
Yeah. They've got a few statues like that in Europe.
You're like, why is this thing? But also we're here, so we may as well.
Let's do it.
But then it's not, obviously, any of their houses because
it's just done as a tourist.
Characters.
Yeah, it's a tourist thing.
But it's free.
Because it's Verona. That's why.
Just getting people to go.
Yeah, basically.
It's a nice city.
It's a tourist attraction.
Cool. Should we just talk about Romeo and Juliet while we're here?
Well, I was going to say that, and then I've got to ask you about one after that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Basically, this story has been adapted time after time. Obviously, we mentioned The Lion King 2. West Side Story, which is like the big, you know.
Big one.
Yep. There's two adaptions of it. I've not finished either of them.
Steven Spielberg did one of them. I don't know the other one.
Nor do I, but it was, you know.
It was more modern, wasn't it? It was like pretty recent.
No, Spielberg did the recent one.
Was he doing the recent one?
He did the recent one.
Original one.
It was someone else before that. Okay. And it's, you know, one of the most well-regarded films.
It is, yeah.
And musicals.
Musicals.
But I cannot get through it. I think maybe part of it is just because I do know where it's going. It's not like, I'll stick through this.
I know the storyline.
Try watching it a bunch of times. Basically, it's, if no one studied this in school, I mean, what are they teaching the kids now? But basically, it's, you know, two kids that are in love. They come from warring families.
Mm.
They're not allowed to fall in love. They do it anyway. One of them fakes their death. The other one then kills himself. She wasn't dead. Oh, no.
Tragedy.
That's basically, it's Romeo and Juliet. But they did Warm Bodies.
Have
you seen this with Nicholas Holt?
Yeah,
I think Teresa Palmer?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't seen this since probably about
the time it came out.
2013, 2014.
It's good.
But I remember enjoying it. Yeah, again, it's good. Very simple.
The whole
story.
Idea is like he's a zombie and she's not, and that's the guess, instead of warring families, it's the fact that he's dead.
I mean, even not looking at like our list, there's so many stories that have taken this idea of like
forbidden love, essentially.
It's
just forbidden love.
Yeah, it's
you can interpret that kind of in different ways, but I mean that's essentially what Romeo and Juliet is.
They did good old Romeo and Juliet.
Romeo and Juliet.
I watched this in school. I was old enough that they put it on and we were like, this is sick.
This is cool.
It's kind of hilarious.
You've seen it, right? Mm-hmm. Do you remember it? Do they do the whole tragic ending?
I think one falls off the garden.
I
think it cracks.
Oh my god!
If I remember rightly, I'm
tragic.
Pretty sure there's something. Maybe they fix him up.
They probably do.
Probably like Humpty Dumpty.
A kid's whole situation.
Yeah,
I do
remember there was like the threat of falling and cracking. Yeah.
That's a good take on it, actually.
It was funny.
That's good.
A really funny film.
I'm gonna have to watch.
Yeah, it's.
You watched something this week, I think, for this episode. And I had seen it previously. It was the Glenn Powell, Sydney Sweeney, Spectacular, Anyone But You.
Yeah. Now, this film on paper should have worked.
Mm. It did. It sold very well.
I mean, like, been worth watching. Worked.
Yeah, that's the difference.
There was something missing with this film. The magic that is often in rom-coms and the chemistry, I don't think, was there.
It felt forced.
Yeah.
It didn't feel real.
Not that
they didn't get along.
It felt probably like it was leaning a little bit closer to like SNL satire in some scenes than actually just being a grounded rom-com.
Yeah. Like you can add elements of comedy into a rom. Well, it's a rom-com.
Rom-com.
Of course it's got comedy in it. But yeah, you're right about the fact that it felt like they were making fun of a rom-com,
mm-hmm.
especially in the scenes with like the family members that are like sitting in the bushes watching them. There's too much of this story that revolves around these two people and it's not even their wedding.
No.
You know what I mean? Like even the people getting married were like, oh, we got to help them out. I'm like, it's your wedding. Who cares?
Yeah.
They became too central.
And I did read up on the Much Ado About Nothing because I don't know if I've read it. Maybe I attempted. This does quite a good
adaptation.
Of the original Shakespearean play in that there's ton of characters because I remember watching this film going, could we have got rid of some of the characters? Yeah. Like there's a lot of people.
It kind of works at a wedding though, like with how many family members turn up and
that
stuff.
Being said, but they were almost central instead of being, you know, popping in, popping out. So it does borrow a lot from the original play, even the sense of like people watching other people. There was a scene in the play because I read up on it where
infidelity.
Yeah, this sort of infidelity, people watching other people having sex, which they sort of pulled back, which
I think it was just them kind of just having conversations.
Yeah.
And people were watching.
Were watching.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of that kind of thing. But I think it did suffer from trying to maybe take too much from the original instead of going, what are the main themes and what are the maybe a few of the beats that are important?
Yeah,
and
hit
how
those,
do that?
But do it in its own way.
Like obviously it was modern, so it was very different. But I was surprised because my friend had gone to see this and she was telling me about it after, you know, the big hype train and she went, oh, it's not too bad.
It is not too bad.
And she's like, oh, also it's based on Shakespeare. And I was like, oh, maybe it's quite good then from the other films that have done the same. But I was watching this and I go, how did no one pick up that it was based on Shakespeare? Because at the very start of the film, when she leaves his, what is supposed to be, I guess, like, I don't know, sort of
when they have the
apartment or whatever, it's hard because it's shot in Sydney, but it's supposed to be
LA.
Yeah. Yeah, she walks out and on the wall there's like a mural which is just like a big Shakespeare quote from probably
Much Ado About Nothing.
And you're like, and it literally says Shakespeare and you're like, well, that's not just like some fun.
It's throwing it at you, but you got to remember spoon feeding these audience.
And then all throughout the film, did you notice there's bits of text like on like signs and stuff which are obviously quotes directly from the play itself? It was an odd one.
It was an odd one, but it did incredibly well. I'm going to look up how much it made because it was one of those ones that you're like, why did it?
I think it's just the fact that it's so hard to get a good rom-com in cinemas now and people want.
Well, yeah, it felt like something from like the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And I think people have been missing that kind of vibe in terms of a rom-com for a while. So on a budget of $25 million to make this film. It made at the box office $220 million.
Wow.
That's incredible for a rom-com, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's huge numbers.
They did well casting Sydney Sweeney, who is well-known with our age group.
She's huge now at the moment. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Glenn Powell.
Same with Glenn Powell, Twisters.
That's what, yeah, but this was before Twisters.
It was before Twisters, but and he's also done Hitman recently as well. He's kind of had one of those years, like he's just having a, he's having a surge in his career.
I didn't know who he was until now.
Really? Okay. So I'm going to show my age, but I used to watch a show about coming up on 10 years ago now, probably 8 years ago, called Scream Queens.
Oh, see that.
He is in that as one of the like jock boys.
Oh.
And he plays this really dumb character, but like really endearing. Yeah, yeah. And he's in both seasons of that, but that's where I kind of
I'd never watched it. I'd just seen like GIFs and all that kind of crap on Tumblr from like Emma Roberts, Billy Lord, and whoever else was part of the Queens.
It was Abigail Breslin.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. Leah Michelle's in it as well.
Oh.
Yeah. It had a.
She's a wild one. She's still in the public eye, and she doesn't do anything. No. But everyone still picks.
She's
on
very
her.
Mean to people, apparently.
She can't read, apparently.
I've read that too. Weird. Anyway, back to him. Back to Shakespeare. but that's how I know him. But yeah, he's had a huge resurgence. So the casting was very good for this film. It did quite well. And I don't think it was it wasn't probably based on the fact that it was a Shakespeare novel. I think it was just people wanting
a rom-com.
A rom-com that of a yesteryear kind of formula.
Yeah.
So
yeah. And, adapting Shakespeare is definitely.
Way
one
to
of
do
those
it.
Things, yeah.
You could definitely do it very well. Very, very well. Nextly.
Yes.
10 Things I Hate About You.
I love this. We watched this in school. This was one of the ones that they put on, I think, when we were doing Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
And it was like the end of semester, but they still had to make it technically like related. So they gave us like one worksheet and said, go watch Heath Ledger. Yeah. And who's in it?
Juliet Stiles.
That's it. And watch her do that. And I think.
I love
Everyone loves it.
I love this film. It's very, it's very so 1999.
Well like, oh my God. I haven't seen it in a long time, but maybe I should rewatch it.
It's really good. I can always remember the scene where he's doing the song on the steps.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of the football pitch. That's huge. I remember that. I remember the scene where she finally recites the 10 things.
Yeah. I love the way you crying. Do your hair or whatever it is. I love the way you whatever.
Yeah. I don't know the things off the heart, but yeah.
No, obviously like, I don't either. Yeah, no,
but like that really iconic scenes, both those scenes in particular, it's got a really young Gordon-Levitt.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
And he's in love with the sister. And the only reason that the sister can go on a date is if the older sister goes on the date. And that's when they hire Heath Ledger to obviously
get her out. Cigarette with the Bunsen burner.
Yep. Classic Heath Ledger.
I mean, I got why people were into Heath Ledger, and I didn't get why a lot of girls were into a lot of guys at the time. But
you can understand
that
this
went,
one. You
that
can see
one
it.
I get. That one that I one can I see. Get.
Yeah, he just had some level of charisma, right?
He did. Yeah. Interestingly enough, he used to be really into Shakespeare.
Yeah, right.
There's a story that I was told, and look, people like to tell me it wasn't true, and that my lecturer was just telling us all these like BS stories, but I would counter that with some people are so weird that their stories and their life are just this insane. Yeah. But she used to talk about being, you know, I think probably down in Sydney and stuff in the 90s.
Mm.
And she'd wake up on like a Saturday morning and there'd be someone knocking on her window being like, Susan, I need to talk to you about Shakespeare. And it was Heath Ledger.
Oh my God, really?
I don't know how they knew each other.
Yeah.
Don't know. But
crazy.
When he was a teenager, he used to just like hang out with her. And
that's awesome.
They talk about
that
Shakespeare.
That is fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so unfortunate what happened to him because I reckon his career would have been incredible to follow.
Yeah, he would have just kept going.
Yeah, because after Dark Knight, like Dark Knight was just something else in terms of performance. Like that was as Joker.
Absolutely.
Yeah, incredible. And this film called, I think it's like Two Hands or something. Mm-hmm. It's got Rose Byrne in it. And I really want to see it.
I think I have. Again,
I haven't, but
it's
I want to.
It's one of those fever dream ones where it's like, did I see this or did I see something else? Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, this film, getting back to Shakespeare.
Yeah, it's based on The Taming of the Shrew.
Which I think I've read, and this is pretty close to it in the sense of, you know, Kat's character is just this, she just doesn't put up with crap from anyone. She's like, I'm cool on my own. I'm well read. I'm this. I'm that.
Apparently, she's called, or she's referred to as the Shrew in one of the first scenes.
Yeah, she's like hated in the class and stuff for just being a bitch. And
well, she stands up for herself and what she believes in and stuff like that. So she's very
yeah,
independent,
was not going to do well with the teenage boys.
No,
in the 90s. No. But yeah, it's just one of those films that's so good. Who's the teacher in it? Isn't there a teacher in it that's like writing erotic fiction?
I think so. From
is that in this one? Is it Allison Janney? Is she in this film?
Wouldn't be surprised. I can't remember. There's
someone in it. I just remember we're watching it in school, being like, "Oh my god!"
And it turns out she created 50 Shades of Grey. yeah, I reckon check it out. I'm gonna get into another film that was around the same era.
Mm-hmm.
It came out 2 years later. It's called Get Over It, and I watched it last night. And it is based on A Midsummer Night's Dream. And it's got like Kirsten Dunst. It is Allison Janney. And she looks at it. Wow, what a look. What a look.
It was amazing.
So yeah, this is definitely, this encapsulated the early 2000s like something else. It was wild. Yeah, Kirsten Dunst, it's got, I'd like to say Ben Stiles is his name. He's been a villain in a bunch of different things. He plays this guy that is dating this girl for a year, and then she breaks up with him. And for him to try and like win her back, he joins the school play that she's in, because there's another guy interested in it. And the play they're doing is A Midsummer Night's Dream, but a modern take on it. Mm-hmm. So most of the story is the same as Midsummer Night's Dream, and they're also playing the play of the Midsummer
Night's Dream. Well, I was doing a bit of reading on A Midsummer Night's Dream this morning, and in the actual Shakespearean play itself, there is a play.
Oh, well, then it's perfectly matches up.
They did this a lot. Obviously, it was originally set in Greece.
Yes.
The Shakespearean one. And they go into the woods, and there's like an impish fairy, which in this was like the high school boys kind of got involved. Yeah.
And that's what happens throughout. Like, he's got his friends that kind of like lean him one way or lean him the other, and they try and make him go on other dates with this random like Australian girl who's really like clumsy as well. It's classic like rom-com thing, like Not Another Teen Movie.
Yep.
Kind of
which
vibe.
I have seen.
Yeah, it's got really young Chris Evans in it with the whipped cream.
Yeah.
Yeah, random movie. But it's got that vibe to it, and it's got obviously Kirsten Dunst. Mila Kunis is in it as well, randomly from Family Guy or like that 70s show.
Yeah.
So many like random faces pop up in this film. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, really? Cool. Well.
Yeah, I actually had a really fun time with it.
I did want to watch this, but then, I don't know, the week just got away from me.
Yeah, I put it on last night while waiting for the football to start, because we had about an hour and a half, and I was like, oh, perfect. It's the exact amount of time before it starts. So we put it on, and I was like, I'm actually really digging this. I thought I was like, oh, here we go.
Yeah, because you messaged me before you'd much got
put it on. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, I think we're about 20 minutes in when you gave me a call. And I was like, yeah, I'm watching this. And then, yeah, I just enjoyed it. I don't think you can find it anywhere. It's one of those random films. Yeah. You're like, it happened. It exists in history, but
there's
good
a lot
luck
of that
to you.
With early 2000s stuff that
just
kind of
get it anymore.
Yeah.
If anyone gets a chance, it's on TV or you just randomly find it, get over it. It's one of those teen, you know, raunchy comedies that they just don't make anymore.
They really don't.
I kind of miss that. It was a lot of fun. But definitely Shakespearean.
Sort of in a similar vein, one that most of us should have seen is the 2006 comedy She's the Man with Amanda Bynes and Channing Tatum. This one actually has a bit of a cult status.
It does.
I remember watching this when it came out, and I was like, this film is like, great. I don't know. I think it was one that was like appropriate enough that like as a young kid you could still watch it and get it. And your parents were like, this is also funny. Like it had layers of comedy.
I think Amanda Bynes
was amazing.
Incredibly good at comedy.
And I'd watched her on like the Amanda Show and stuff like when I was little. And she got comedy.
She
physical
was
comedy.
Really
she was almost
good,
like the Jim Carrey.
I thought she was really good, and this movie was like the pinnacle of like her career. Mm-hmm. I think is how she could pull off being like the attractive blonde that everyone wanted, but also playing like the boy character
the
that she was.
Boy
the boy character as well. She could just swap characters on a whim. It was fantastic to watch. She was great.
My favorite Scooter.
Oh, just so many cringe scenes, but like funny. Like just so funny.
So funny, and this one takes off the play The Twelfth Night, which is sort of pretty identical to it. Even like the character names were the same. The settings were pretty much like, obviously it's modern, but they used the same name of the fictional city to be the school name and stuff like that. the pretty much only difference is in the original play, the character of Olivia disguises herself as Cesaro and not like the character of her brother Sebastian. That's much the only difference, which is kind of impressive that they were able to make such a stunning teen comedy.
Yeah.
Off that. And it had been done before in 85 with a film called Just One of the Guys, which oddly enough I'd seen.
Have you seen it? I haven't seen it.
Yeah, no. I don't know why, when. I think it was like a 2020 film that I just stumbled across.
Yep.
God knows what anyone was.
Some movies I've done that and I'm like, it's on, I'm watching it.
And it's kind of similar. It follows this character, Terry, who wants to be taken seriously as a journalist, but she can't. So she enrolls in the boys' school, does her journalism. This one's a bit more like 80s controversial, serious. So like it gets a bit weird, like, quote unquote weird. When it's like, oh, is she a guy? So she's gay, but no. And then there's still that topless reveal, apparently.
Have to do that.
Which, it makes sense because she's the man. Yeah. But like the fact that it was done twice.
Yeah.
Maybe it was in the play itself.
It must be. Some type of reveal to be like, well, obviously I'm not.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't read The Twelfth Night.
But yeah, it sort of is it like more of a serious one. I think she's the man, obviously. Stood the test of time a little bit more.
Yeah, it's great.
But there is like this funny stuff that goes on. Like often a lot of these ones, there's like, and even in the Shakespearean plays, there's like a really subtle being like, is this man into another man?
Well, yeah.
Like it just keeps cropping up. The more I read, it's like.
Wasn't it a very loose liberals back then though?
I think so.
Wasn't there?
I don't think so.
I don't know.
I mean, everyone's always done everything. Yeah. Talk about.
I mean, look at the Greeks, right?
They were dirty and
that's
they were
my
gay.
Point. Like, it was completely fine.
It was fine then.
Yeah. What
they happened? Used to encourage it.
Yeah, I know. That. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, they encouraged it when they were.
So maybe that's why he's taking.
From the Greeks.
From the
stuff.
Greek. And, like, also and then inserting it into his own adaptations, potentially.
The man's a playwright.
Yeah. Look, I didn't want to. Yeah.
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 Shoe fits. I mean,
the shoe fits.
Statistics are here for a reason, you know. But getting back to it.
Yeah. One that we didn't see. But we've both been wanting to, you tried it this week.
Yeah.
Is Ran, 1985 by Akira Kurosawa. Mm-hmm. It's based on King Lear. Now, apparently I've read that like this is supposed to be like quintessential cinema.
Oh, it is. I watched about 15, 20 minutes of it, but I was trying to watch it one day this week and it was on at like 7:30 and I was already falling asleep.
And it's like a 2.5 hour film.
And I just went, could suffer through this week. And then have a really like sour view of the film because I've been sleeping through it.
Mm.
Or I can save it and watch it later, which is what I'm going to do. Yeah. And I'll talk about it once I've actually seen it. I love Kurosawa. I've seen Rashomon, which I think
you told me about
everyone should watch Rashomon. We watched it in uni when we did our World Cinema and it is just stunning. I do really, really want to rewatch Rashomon. It's told from the perspective of three different characters that were all involved in a crime.
Mm-hmm.
But it's based on this idea of like everyone has their own truth and it's all relative to your experience. It doesn't kind of go, this one was what really happened. It just leaves you with these three truths.
Yeah,
which is just amazing. I don't know if I've seen Seven Samurai.
Seven Samurai is an experience. It's 3 and a bit hours, I think.
Yeah, I'm not. I've seen bits from it, definitely.
Oh, everyone
and
has.
I've seen A Bug's Life, so I've seen
The Magnificent Seven.
I've seen one of.
I've seen the newest one with Chris Pratt.
Anywho,
it's been adapted time and time again, is what we'll say. So, like Akira Kurosawa is like he's a very established
Japanese
filmmaker and considered one of the greatest directors of all time.
Mm-hmm.
He's done a bunch of different films that have then influenced a lot of Hollywood and a lot of cinema that you see today. And one of his films that is, you know, incredibly well regarded is Ran from 1985, which is based on King Lear. It's about like a king who separates three of like his kids into different kind of areas and they all rule each of them. Yep. And then a giant war starts from that.
I didn't get very far, so all I got up to was him going, I'm out, I'm old, I'm dividing my property.
And he divides it into three to his three sons, and then they fight over who is actually going to rule.
Yeah, and, like, it's visually stunning. It's known for its, like, color palette, which I picked up immediately. It was almost the first thing you see because not a lot's happening.
Yeah.
The beginning. But I do really, 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 really want to get to this one. But it kind of, like you were saying, people have adapted his stuff, like Seven Samurai became Bug's Life, became Magnificent Seven, whatever. The same way as he's doing Shakespeare. Like,
it's incredible.
It works. And it's a fantastic way of retelling stories for new audiences, which I think Hollywood needs to come back and do.
They need to reestablish that train of thought rather than, oh, it's a film from the 80s that we can just do a legacy sequel. That person's not working. They'll probably want to do it.
Yeah.
Get them back in.
And it's just, it never quite, it's kind of ruins what was beautiful about the original.
I think yes and no.
To a degree.
To a degree, because I think the reason why people want to remake these films or do another version of it is because there's so much love there. It's like 20, 25 years of love and nostalgia building and ownership. They know they're going to get an audience based on that. But the same thing, I don't think it takes away from the original film because everyone will be like, oh, I didn't really love XYZ reversion of the new thing.
True.
I'm just going to watch the original and act like it wasn't made.
Yeah.
So I can appreciate, yes, the love there to make it, but then at the same time, just keep watching the original. And just if that's what you want, just keep watching that.
Have you seen My Own Private Idaho?
No. When I was writing this down, I was like, this actually sounds like something that's up my alley. Obviously, it's Keanu Reeves and River Phoenix before he passed.
It's a beautiful film. I don't recall a lot of it. I think, again, it was one of those 2020 fever dream watches. Movies. I was working like 6 days a week out of my mind. What is real? What is life? Will it continue? I'm not sure. But yeah, this was one of the ones I watched then and I remember finding it stunning. But it's one of the ones that I don't recall
too much about
strongly. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's based on Henry the Fourth parts 1 and 2 as well.
Yep.
From 1991. So it's pretty young Keanu Reeves in that as well. But yeah, two close friends.
I think it was one of River Phoenix's last final films. Yeah.
Yeah. I do need to check it out, I think. It's sounds like something I want to see, but I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, it sort of just follows a hustler who's afflicted with narcolepsy and they both go on a journey, have a bit of a love affair as well, like along the way.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I can't remember how much it is. But yeah, it's subtextually at least there.
Yeah, okay.
And they just go on this journey. They're both struggling and yeah, I mean it's Keanu and it's River Phoenix and they were
apparently really good friends at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, in real life.
And they made a lot of stunning films.
Yeah, they did. They did. Yeah. Unfortunate.
So it's definitely one that I can't talk a lot on, but it is worth checking out.
We've got a few still to watch for the next couple of weeks because there's a bunch of different adaptations out there of things. There was like O as well. Mm-hmm. There was a couple of other ones. And obviously we didn't mention ones that are like, this is a modern version of.
No, because
there's no point. Like, you know it is. But yeah, we've got plenty to get through the next couple of weeks. I think that about wraps us up though
for this week. Well, we've got the Emmys coming up.
Yes, we
tomorrow do. For us, which I'm hoping maybe I can just stay off the internet and come home and watch that night, which I might be able to do because I managed to do that.
Mm.
What was it? Maybe the Olympics, I think I did it for.
The opening ceremony?
Tilly's Games or something.
Oh, you did. I definitely did.
So maybe I can get away with that at work. Just go radio silent.
Get off your phone. I'll text you in the morning going, get off your phone.
Yeah.
And you'll be like, why am I reading this text?
Well, I want to watch it anyway because they've got Dan Levy and Eugene hosting.
Which I think are phenomenal.
I love those
two. I can't wait to see them host.
What's it on?
It'll be on Fast. Binge.
Okay.
Yes, they'll have a live Binge chat.
Cool. Later. I'm excited. There's a few that I really want to see win. Mostly in the comedy section I've seen more of and a few of the like movies or like limited series I've watched a few of.
Yep.
We do want to do an episode next week.
We will. It's actually probably good that we're doing it next week because I think once we actually find out some of the winners,
we can try and watch those rather than
actually just random nominations. I will say I have started watching Shogun though.
I might sell that tonight.
It is good so far. Very good.
Shogun and there was one other I was going to check out. I can't think what it is.
You've already seen The Bear. You've already seen Hacks. What else is kind of going on
it's
in
the dramas sphere that I haven't seen? Oh, it was the Amazon one, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, that I was curious about checking
out. I want to check that out as well because that's got a Donald Glover in it.
And someone else. I can't think of her name. Anyway.
I see her face, but yeah.
But that pretty much wraps up for today. I hope you guys enjoyed this one. It was a bit left of field, but I figured
it was fun.
we got to get through everything. Yeah, and yeah. We haven't mentioned it. So like,
let's do it.
We'll get to it. But as always, thanks so much for listening. If you're enjoying this podcast, please give it a follow. And if you'd like, you can get in touch with us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at BingeList, or you can email us like Wayne did, shout out again to Wayne, at bingelistandboxofficehits@gmail.com. Thank you so much. Happy watching, happy Emmys, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, guys.